Eugene Bell of 1657 Monument Street and Diana Clymer of 235 Main Street are being interviewed by Renee Garrelick for Concord's Oral History Program. The interview is taking place at Diana's home on January 27, 1999. I have an opportunity today, speaking with you, to look at the human dimension of prison and the work that you've done for so long with programs and with local inmates.
Well, I felt very lucky to be doing this work. I'm very connected with Concord and its history, because Concord, I feel, is a very unique community with a great deal of energy and a very caring community. And that those aspects have shown itself even in our prison. Concord asked petitioned the legislature in the late 1800s and asked to have a prison built here. And I think that is quite an unusual situation to have done that. Townspeople did that for two reasons. One, an economic reason, which was to bring employment to the town, and all the people who worked in the prison lived in Concord, so it provided a great number of jobs. But they also did it because they wanted to separate the youthful offenders from the older offenders who were in the Charles Street prison in Boston. So it started in the late 1800s and was called the Concord Reformatory. And people in town were working in the prison. People in town were volunteering in the prison. And there were wonderful stories of different people in our community now who can remember times that they were volunteering in the institution with their parents. So it really has been a tradition of involvement, of local involvement in our prison. I got involved in the 60s, shortly after we moved to Concord. I became active in the First Parish Church and joined the Social Responsibility Committee. The committee asked each one of us to dream up our own project and execute it. Well, I was brand new to the community, and I looked around and I saw this person. I was curious. I'm a young child, and I considered myself going to Boston to do my community service. I was curious about what would be doable here. So I went and set an appointment with Nick Janakis, who is then the superintendent of the institution, and went in and asked him, wearing my halo, I'm sure, what a group of people could do in the community for the prison. And bless his heart, he didn't laugh. He said, we could use some curtains for the infirmary. I did not know how to sew, so I struck a panic in my gut, but I said, smiled, and I said, that would be wonderful. We'd be happy to do that for you. And I immediately found some seamstresses, and we went to work making curtains for the infirmary. The next project he asked us to do was to do decorations for the dining hall of MCI Concord. And Jeff normally had done the decorations. Well, we decided to bring the smells of Christmas to the inmates. And a number of us went out into the woods and got huge boughs of pine and pine cones. And we did great sprays of these wonderfully fragrant pines. 24 of them hang between each of the windows in the dining room, the dining hall. Well, we arrived in Mary McClintock's van with these different 24 of these sprays, and the correctional officer got into the van with us and brought us around to the dining hall. We unloaded the greens, we put them up, it looked fantastic. We got back in the van, and the correctional officer said, my husband is a rock climber, and we go camping, and so we use this vehicle. He said, oh, that's very nice. And he lifted up the seat of the box that he was sitting on as we went into the van. And there were enough rope and peons and various kinds of climbing equipment that probably could have taken about 15 men up and over the wall. He turned absolutely white and said, oh ladies, please get out of here. We knew our secret of the safe that he would never tell about our discretion, which we totally were oblivious to. Because it was actually his responsibility who checked out the van. But anyway, that was my initial introduction to the prison.
Do you recall, is this about the mid-1960s or later?
It was later, probably around 1967.
Mm-hmm.
It was a time at the institution when the inmates were really very, very active doing their lots of different programs underway. Commissioner Boone was at the helm at that point in time, or was he at that point? There were programs like the Concord Community Inside Outside newspaper that was the oldest prison newspaper in the country that's still going strong. Chaplain's Discussion Group were having programs, Norfolk Fellowship, the Peaceful Movement Committee, which Clem Smith was so active in, was very prominent at that point in time and doing a lot of good work. And I started, after we did these two little programs, began to explore with the superintendent some other kinds of programs that we could do to link up the community with the prison, to make use of some of the resources we had in the community for the prison. And we established a number of different things. We thought that the program should be larger than just something coming from the First Parish Church. So we involved a number of people in the community, and it was called the Concord Correctional Resource Group. And the kinds of programs that we did at the time were to establish a file at the library for all kinds of information having to do with prison. We had offered an art course, and then had a show at the Emerson Umbrella. We had a show at the Concord Library of the artwork. Clem Smith wrote a weekly column in the newspaper called Notes on the Wall. We had a reception for some of the officials in the prison, some of the officials in the town. We started again the historical precedent of having the superintendent march in April 1948. And we offered Nancy and Art Turner, who our committee offered the adult education course in the prison. So it was really not actual programs that we were doing for the inmates, but it was an effort to sort of link up the community and the prison to make resources available. This was going along swimmingly. We were having a great deal of fun, and all of a sudden, it seemed out of the blue to us. We were asked not to come in to do any of the programs, and all of the other programs that were being done were asked to leave the institution. And we discovered afterward that, in fact, it was such a liberal time that the control wasn't sufficient at the institution for having volunteers in their state room. There were some areas of the prison the inmates were controlled. So at that point in time, there were 400 inmates in the institution. And our involvement with the institution really ended, and sort of ended in the late 70s. After we had done a lot of fun things, but we just
Now, do you want to make a distinction between Behind the Wall and the Northeast Correctional Institute.
Yes. At that point in time, we were working as a large institution. I hadn't put a foot in the door. The institutions that we were connected with that, they were all in the one system. But we were just really interacting with the main system.
Well, my involvement started in the late 1970s. I was a social ministry commission at the church, and our chairman was looking for what focus the church should undertake in terms of our mission. And he asked Dr. Charles December people sitting in the dining hall and those metal tables and hard benches. And enjoying making music together and enjoying exchanging our appreciation. And that began when I had become an annual tradition.
And about what year was that?
That was in 1982.
And you've done this then? Ever since?
Ever since.
What is that?
The next year we were able to get an divinity student who was assigned to work at their field place with the garden and the director of the institution. There was Robert Edgar, who had grown up there for a while and was very familiar with this community. And part of the field place was to spend some time with this. And she found nice skills for it that was focused on finding a job, how to get a job. She persuadedly that we could give this course and bring volunteers to help do that. So there were about 25. Persuaded to become chair of what was at that time called the Conference.
found out, realized that he would get along further, the need was greater to do something, things in the educational area, that there was a little bit of a turf issue with the chaplains that were at NCC. They had their program, and space was limited, so that it would be probably not a good idea to offer any more religiously oriented programs. And the job search program had been well received by the administration as something that they found useful. So we contacted a number of resources, one of which was in Boston, had a Concord Correctional course, Comprehensive Offenders Employment Resource Services, and they worked with inmates who are going back out into the community. So they worked with us and really beefed up the initial program that they had been put in place and made it more specific to the needs of the inmates who are going to be returning to society. That program, the pattern remained the same, though, of bringing people in from the community to get them to take the program with the inmates, and that way learn the curriculum. And their being participants, along with the inmates, gave the entire program a sense of competency, that it wasn't a program that we were doing to the inmates or just for the inmates, but this is a program that we were doing with the inmates. I think it heightened the sense of how valuable it was to see the community people were coming to take this program too. Once the volunteers knew the curriculum, then they could take a turn in teaching the program. And we expanded the program. We offered more depth of the program on resume writing. We then offered a program of career exploration. And once a week, we would bring in four different people from the community to talk about their careers. What was it like to be a landscaper? What was it like to start your own business? What was it like to work in food services and so forth? And they would just talk about pluses and minuses of their work, and the inmates would ask questions. The inmates could get a sense of what other occupations it might be that they might be interested in. The job search program led us into thinking about other life skills in this program, such as money management. And we worked with the Extension Service over here on Stowe Street. The thought was that we, in trying to develop these curriculums and so forth, that we really should make use of all of the resources we have in this community. So when I possibly could, I would get an expert or a program that was already intact to use, and then just build and develop the volunteer team with that. So they helped us formulate the money management program, and it was about 8 sessions long, and then worked with learning how to budget, learned about banking. One of the things that always surprised everybody who became involved in the program was the range of abilities and interests and skills that these inmates had. Some of them knew all about banking, some of them knew absolutely nothing about it. So that you had to pitch all of these courses towards the middle and use volunteers to bring those who needed extra help along. And the main thrust of every single one of the programs was to help build self-esteem and confidence. We also started programs in tutoring so that men could get their GEDs. So we were tutoring men in English and in math. And then started an English as a second language program, again working with Laubach. We went to the Concord Arts Council and asked for a grant so we could give a stipend, a small their families, they've even failed in crime, and somehow to receive a certificate that they can accomplish something just made such a difference. And so visibly, so to all of us who are working with them, I asked the person, Martha Rouse, if she would come in to see the man receive their certificates. She had done these certificates for all of these programs. She was very hesitant to come in, very, very sweet, very shy, wasn't sure, very nervous. And some of the volunteers were nervous about coming in. But anyway, I told Martha that I promised her an interesting experience, and I would be with her. So she came in to the prison, saw and received their certificates, and began talking to some of them at the end of the program. And I approached her and asked if she'd be willing to lead a police detail. She said yes, she thought she could. So with a little hand-holding, she started to lead a detail. It surprised us all because you wouldn't think of trying to teach calligraphy to a bunch of hardened criminals, quote unquote. But it was absolutely the quintessential perfect thing to be teaching. In 4 sessions, we got them to learn their skills. So they not only learned the skill, but they also had something that they would have for the rest of their lives. In their leisure time, which they had a lot in prison, or they could do it and make money. They did, they would calligraphy poems that they brought in and present them to their family and make money for it. So it was a very, very successful program. You could hear a pin drop in the world. You felt like you were in a monastery watching these men so diligently working on their letters. The NCI began to hear about it, the programs we were doing at NCC, and then meetings began over there to get involved with their educational team. And we met with the director of treatment and started developing some of these courses on the street. So by 1988, we had a great cadre of people.
Now, had NCI at that time become the processing center for the state that it is now? Because if people move through just to be processed,
my guess is it was more like that changed. It was just an inmate from NCC important. Went out on furlough and did not return. And he committed an additional crime. And the Republican presidential picked this up and accused Governor DeKalb of being assaulted. This became a big tool of thought that, in no small way, affected the outcome. The crime was lost. He returned, continued his career, but the net result was that the open door policy of the truth was changed. And more and more security rather than rehabilitating programs in the end. When he was succeeded by Governor William Wells, this emphasis was raised to a much greater level, and prisons were supposed to be really good complicated. We're Catholic. They have to get up at 4 a.m., be there, milk those cows. Cows depended on them. If they didn't get there, nobody else would. They had to take care of the little calves that were born, and often an inmate would be assigned one particular calf to be responsible. They had to feed it with a bottle, nurture it along, for some, that was an opportunity to be caring and nurturing to another living being. Those opportunities are there. They learned how to repair old farm equipment because there weren't the funds to buy new tractors and whatever. So they became good mechanics. And another factor was that the staff in the barn treated them as human beings, didn't put them down, had expectations of them, and expressed appreciation for them.
That gives you an idea of the lack of programming that was going on in that solution. One of the things that, I say Concord has been unique, and one of the things that was very fortunate was that we have established such a wonderful rapport with the administration of both of these institutions in Concord. We had worked together in the past, and they were eager to see, as directors of treatment, they would like to have some treatment, and we were the only game in town to help them provide some treatment. So even though the tenor of the time at other institutions and in the Department of Corrections itself was restrictive programs, the directors of treatment at these two institutions were very grateful for whatever we could muster. And so we had quite an open door to bring all kinds of things in. The other thing that I should note is that not only were we grateful that we had developed this good rapport with the administration, both the security administration and the directors of treatment, the superintendent, but we also had the historical background in our favor. So that each time the new superintendent would come to the institution, I would sit down with the new superintendent and I would tell him about history. Well, how the townspeople in Concord petitioned the legislature to have a prison built here, and the kind of community involvement that has occurred over the years. So that they really hoped, well, I hope that they have felt, I think they did feel a sense of becoming part of a greater whole than just their institution, that they were part of the Concord community, the Concord community had been part of the institution, and that we had a model to maintain. And I was delighted to see that a lot of these superintendents asked me to drive them around town, to introduce them to different people in town. They spoke at different occasions in town, so we tried to foster that sense of being part of a larger community at every stage of the game. But anyway, even though in other institutions programs were missing, because of this good rapport, because of the historical tradition that we had, we developed all kinds of programs at this point. And we also were given an office of the West Concord Union Church. The West Concord Union Church had been coveted by members of the prison officers many, many years ago, and the West Concord Union Church felt that they would like very much to offer the prison outreach office space in their church. So we had the office space to use to, again, bring people out, to orient them, to get them involved, and so forth. I'm going to run down a list of some of the different programs that we've done. And I would like to preface it by saying that when the Concord community has been such a giving community all these many years, and so curious about the prison, that it was very easy to get these programs established using the talent that we already had. For instance, we wanted to do a health program. The institution actually came to me and asked me if we could do a health series program. It was something that they needed for accreditation. Program once a month. So I needed 12 doctors to come and speak one a month. And I made 13 phone calls in order to get because I think it shows that if when you extend the invitation to somebody in the community, I found every single time that people were curious and willing to entertain the possibility of coming in and doing the program. Right? The 13th doctor that said he couldn't do it had a conflict. but he did it the next year. So I found just in meeting people around town, I would, at various occasions, I would talk with them about the programs we were doing. I would learn about what their particular interest might be, what their avocation or what their career was, and see if they might be willing to come and teach a course at the prison. And they would stop and think, wow, really? Teaching a course on stocks and bonds, really? And I said, well, you might find it quite interesting. And in fact, we had such courses as a course on stocks and bonds. And at one institution, the group of men that signed up had knew absolutely nothing about stocks and bonds. And the next time we offered the course in another institution, the group that signed up had been wheelers and dealers in stocks and bonds, and they had, it was a whole different kind of program. So, and the man who gave the course had the best time. Absolutely. One of the things that we found is that people who came in to volunteer would come in expecting to give something to the inmates, and each and every time they would come out saying how much they had received and how excited they were.
Now the programs are at NCC?
No, we were doing them at both institutions.
Oh,
we were doing them at both institutions at that point in time. By 1988, we were in full swing in both institutions. So let me run through a list of some of the programs that we were offering. We offered a program on photography. Dave Chase did a program on photography, which was fascinating because you weren't allowed to bring cameras in. But that didn't deter us. We still talked about the principles of photography and of design and so forth. That also offered a program in journalism. That was in conjunction with trying to keep alive the Concord Community Inside Outside newspaper. A program called Chorus was developed. Marsha Martin came in and led a group of men who became the NCC Chorus. And they sang at various occasions. We then had not only a caroling night, but we had something, a Valentine occasion, a party at Valentine's Day. And we also had something called the Spring Fling, where Tom Rubbles came in and played with his group. And the chorus participated in all of those. Someone came in and taught juggling. We also were starting at that point in time the Holiday Shoebox Project, which has become a mainstay of prison outreach's work, where once a year people in the community decorate a shoebox and fill it with items that are allowed to be. Given to the men at the holiday season. We had a program on yoga, a program of relaxation techniques. We started literacy. Someone came in and did a program on income taxes, another program on insurance. We started a program on smoking cessation. We had a speech therapist who came in and worked with some men who had speech problems. Robin Moore taught a program in writing. The CORS Boston did a program on how to start your own business. We had a separate program on communications. Program started through the Emerson Hospital on tools of recovery, substance abuse program. We then started another program was how to read legal contracts, origami, comparative religions, compulsive behavior, decision making, chess, first aid, book discussion group, a program Jack LaMote did on take charge of your health. We did programs on black history, a course on speaking effectively. Anyway, it was a long, long list. Each and every time, we would find somebody who had a skill to offer and come in and begin the program. What we were realizing in doing all these programs was that the core of the program was building self-esteem. Lynn Outerkirk and Betsy Grennan started a program on parenting. And that program on parenting highlighted this need for building self-esteem. And through that work, we decided to try and find a program that's really specialized in building self-esteem. And that led us to the discovery of the Alternatives to Violence program, which is an experiential program that takes place over a weekend. And that program has become probably one of the most powerful programs that we offer. The parenting program expanded to not just offer parenting program, but also a father support group came out of that. And now also happening is a program called Family Relationships, which we're working with spouses and so forth. Another program that got started was Healthy Survival Skills. That also is sort of an experiential program. And a program called Breaking the Chains, which was intended to bring in the Black community from Boston, to network with the Black churches in Boston, to bring volunteers in from the Black community to work with the inmates so that when they came back to the community, they would have some familiar faces to re-enter with. And out of the Alternatives to Violence program, we had a participant of the Alternatives to Violence program, Robin Kasarjian, who left her session and said, you know, the work that I'm doing in the area of forgiveness, I think would be pertinent here. So I sat down with Robin and found out what she was doing. And she ended up giving a program on forgiveness. She was fascinated with what evolved from that program, just as all the other volunteers were stretched and excited about working with inmates in their program. And she developed, worked again, gave several courses on forgiveness, and out of those courses a book developed on emotional awareness, emotional healing was the name of the course, but the name of the book was Houses of Healing. And that book has been the basis of the emotional awareness, emotional healing course for a number of years, and it's been an incredibly powerful course for both volunteers and inmates who are taking it.
Invariably, your work is also connected with what is going on in the court system. So a program and court sentences and releases are interchangeable. Can you comment?
Well, because the Concord Prison was set up originally as a reformatory, when a judge wanted to send a youthful offender to Concord, the idea was keep him there until he learns to mend his way and you think he's a good one to go back out. So the Concord sentences were indeterminate sentences. The judge may say sentence to Concord for up to 10 years, but prison authorities could decide after 2 years that he could never move up, and he would get out in 2 years. Over the years, the inequity that resulted was apparent in the public, and there was a strong feeling that this was not fair, because one judge would order one length of sentence, another judge another length of sentence. And whatever they said, if it was a Concord sentence, you couldn't count on how long it would be in. Whereas if it was a Walpole sentence,
with what they call proof in sentencing legislation. And through that, the Concord sentence was eliminated. And there was a new range of sentences adopted. Actually, part of that movement is to create guidelines that will apply to all judges, and they have a specific range of sentences that we all are guided by. But while there was a sentencing commission appointed and an extensive report, great study, and they have recommendations, that has not been passed by the legislature. But by eliminating the Concord sentence, and a law was kind of did that, most inmates are serving much longer terms than the and that, again, is increasing. But to return to what we tried to do as a result of finding how the education budget department was cut for six successive years. We started meeting with the director of prison education and with her superior to work out what would be a constructive form of action that we could take that would help increase the funds that they have available so that they wouldn't have to keep cutting the number of teachers. And we became aware of a model of legislation which had already been passed at the impetus of the sheriff of the Suffolk County Jail, which applied to all county jails, which required that there be a mandatory education program for all those who were not literate. And so we formulated a law, a proposed bill, that was very similar to that, only it would apply to the state prisons. And we brought this idea to our state senator, Lucille Hicks, to our state representative, Meeser, and they both were willing to push for this to be passed. Very interesting to come in and testify before the legislative committee on criminal justice and to be called in when they were redrafting this bill. It got passed by both the House and the Senate, but when the conference committee met to reconcile the two budgets, they eliminated that part which we discussed our proposal, which we missed our proposal with all of its wording. However, Lucille Hicks was able to get that wording in as supplemental. And the Department of Corrections found itself with the mandate of the prime pilot program. Which they did. And in 1966, we had a pilot program with three teachers in Norfolk, which is immense, so they had two teachers in Framingham, which is great.
This would be 1990?
1990. And that was to emphasize that those who did not have basic literacy skills, which meant below sixth grade level. Anyway, as a result of this, the Department of Corrections did have for 1 year a pilot program. We are still waiting learn exactly how they're going to apply the lessons learned. They did find that there were men who refused to participate. They found that there were some remarkable strides made by those who did, not in all cases, but in a significant number of cases. And they began to develop incentives and sanctions that would try to persuade those who were reluctant to go to school because they had such bad experiences in their youth to at least give this a try for 90 days. After that, it would be up to them as to whether they would continue doing their education. But I think our efforts to make legislators aware of the importance of education and of the drastic cuts in budgets up to that point did make an impression, and in the following year there was almost $1 million increase in funds that were put into up on this one because there's so much more that needs to be done. That's what we have to do.
One of the things that we have found as we were doing this legislative effort, that we had to be vigilant and actually pick up the pace of educating the community so that we would have citizens support for backing this kind of legislation. So we had various kinds of forums. We have been hosting forums and right straight through since the beginning of Concord Prison Outreach, because this was our network of getting volunteers. We would go to set up a forum in different faith communities to talk about volunteer needs in the prison. And we should say that in terms of the structure of Concord Prison Outreach, it was based, the organizational structure of Concord Prison Outreach is based on the support of all of the faith communities in Concord and many of the surrounding towns. They are the ones that have provided funds for program materials. They're the ones through whom we have gotten most of our volunteers. And at this point, it's a wonderful cadre of people in town who have become active. The kinds of community forums that we would do would be not only at the different churches, where we'd be talking about now legislative issues as well as volunteer opportunities, but we'd also talk with League of Women Voters forums. I met with Newcomers Club, the Rotary, the Lions Club, the Concord Clergy Lay group. In each case, when we went to speak, we would bring somebody from the institution, an inmate or a former inmate when we could, and a volunteer to sort of share the different aspects of the work, why it was so meaningful to the different people involved. Jean served as a member of the Concord Clergy Lay group and met with them once a month to give them updates to open meetings and so forth at the institution. And the community was, as always, very eager to hear what was going on. We spoke to the Rotary at least twice, the Lions Club a couple of times, the Chamber of Commerce a couple of times. Anyway, they wanted to hear over and over again. This was an important element. We felt that our work was
important. And another way that we did that was to offer a course through the Adult Education Program called did that four different times over the years. One year we gave a course called Our Criminal Justice System, which involved judges, members of the parole board, probation people, to try to help people understand the whole system, from police, police chief, so that they could see the interconnection between how you treat people who break the law at the beginning, what happens when you're in incarceration, and parole, because parole is in the past has been a very important incentive for prisoners to be on their best behavior so that they can get out earlier on parole. Unfortunately, in recent years, the emphasis has been on not letting inmates out early, and many of them get turned down for parole, which can be extremely destructive when they have worked so hard to prove that they are different from when they came in. We want the hard to gain skills while they're in the prison, and that doesn't seem to be recognized, which is unbelievable for the check. And part of that is because the political climate is such that people running for office, particularly governors, don't want any chances. Remember really work and what that is. And so it's instructive to be about their chances.
Now the prison system itself, many people don't realize you can start in the maximum security and depending on your behavior and so forth, work your way to a minimum.
That's right. Maximum to medium, minimum to free release, which is a very, very helpful step between minimum security and constantly prison sentence to free release, where you may be in a much more community setting and go out for jobs. Daily, really get used to being responsible for behavior. When the prison negates, you are not supposed to make decisions for yourself. At least it discourages. Another one of the public forums that we put on is on the subject of restorative justice, which is a relatively new term. And the basis for restorative justice programs is the idea that when a harm is done, it's done to a victim. And often the community is also harmed by that crime. And there needs to be a restoration of relationships between offender, victim, restorative justice programs try to accomplish that. So we had a program that was attended by over 200 people from about 48 different towns in Eastern Massachusetts on the subject of restorative justice. Two programs, because the second one was an opportunity to hear a judge from Canada speak about how he has used circle sentencing, which he discovered from the native in after an offender has admitted his guilt, the judge may ask the participation of the community in determining his sentence. And included among those who gather to discuss what happened, why, what should be done about it, are the offender, his friends and family, the victim, his or her friends. Police, prosecutors, defense attorney, probation, and any other members of the community who are interested. And people sit in a circle where each person has a chance to speak. And when they are speaking, everyone else listens. And as some symbolic thing like a feather is passed around, each in turn speaks from the heart or passes later message. But the effect of this is amazing, really amazing. And out of the process usually emerges consensus as to what happened, how that can be set right, and what needs to happen in the future to prevent that kind of behavior occurring again, either by a particular offender or others. And the community members take responsibility for something to put the solution. Be that providing a job for the offender, or drug counseling, or education, or whatever is needed, and for helping make things right for the victim.
So that's what restorative justice is about.
When was your adult education for failed? We had 200 people
at all good schools.
That's incredible.
We were just a bit of a mess.
But a lot of effort went into that by a committee of people that reached outside of the company business. We had a very knowledgeable lawyer who was a specialist in mediation. At the Harvard Law School, who was probably Austin Fleming, based in West Concord, at a ladies' church, Catholic church in West Concord, with the women voters. And we had sponsoring organizations all around to help make it possible. I think that it really was one of the evidences of the community recognizing what has been done on public prison outreach under Dye's leadership was when the Human Rights, Concord-Carlisle Human Rights Council chose this organization to receive their Climate for Freedom Award, which is given biannually to the community group that they feel has done the most in the public service. And the new Commissioner of Corrections, Maloney, was the speaker on that occasion. To the organization, but Diane and I both feel that it really is a tribute to this community and all of the people in the that have responded so generously to requests getting involved with the teachers.
Thank you.
That was wonderful.